Welcome to the Teaching Journeys podcast, hosted by Dave Roberts. Humanity possesses a unique skill, the ability to pass knowledge from one generation to the next. This podcast embraces that ability, offering learning opportunities through conversations with extraordinary guests. Dave aims to leave a positive mark on individuals around the world. So before you dive into today's episode, please share this podcast with your network, including friends, family, and colleagues. And please consider leaving a rating or review. Your support makes all the difference.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the Teaching Journeys podcast. Today, it is my pleasure to have as my guest, Catherine Miller. Catherine Miller is an integrative wellness professional and Reiki master. She is a passionate wellness professional in the DC metro area. She enhances corporate wellness by day and teaches Reiki and yoga by night. Catherine's expertise spans Reiki, mindfulness, and trauma-informed practices. She is a Reiki master at Four Directions Wellness in Alexandria, Virginia, and a 200-hour registered yoga teacher specializing in divine sleep and yoga nidra. With an MS in nutrition, Catherine is also a certified crystal practitioner, health and wellness coach, energy and sound healing facilitator, and trained in holy fire Reiki. Honored as one of Alexandria's 40 under 40 in 2020, she empowers self-awareness and healing through her integrative approach. And I got to take a breath for a minute there after reading all of your credentials and qualifications and accolades. I need to take a cleansing breath. So with that, Catherine, welcome to the Teaching Journeys podcast. I've been looking forward to our conversation for some time now.
Me too. Thank you so much for having me. And I have to admit, there were a few years where I went a little over, not overboard, but I was like, let me take as many trainings as possible. I was really excited to learn. So that's why the list is a little long.
Well, you know, I'm 69 years old and I'm still excited to learn. And the day that we all stop being excited to learn is the day we have to really check and ask, okay, what's next?
Yeah, agreed.
We had a great pre-chat. We covered a lot of territory. I think that was one of the longer pre-chats I think I've had. It was about like an hour and 20 minutes, but we just were talking about so many different categories that I resonate with. And as you know, I resonate with integrate health. I resonate with holistic practices that can complement science and help increase physical, mental, and emotional healthcare outcomes and well-being. So I think we're going to have a great conversation. But before we get into all of that, please tell our listeners about the experiences that have shaped your life path and your life passions today.
Sure. So there are several. I'll try to keep it brief for the sake of our time. I think growing up, I had just a variety of health things, mostly physical. Issues with things like diet, things making me sick. When I was a teenager, I had both of my hips operated on. And so even though I didn't realize it at the time, I think it definitely affected what I do now. It kind of started to, that was almost the paving the way into what I do now. But I think at that time I saw my body as the enemy. I felt like I was fighting myself, right? It was like, oh, I can't eat this. I can't eat that. I can't have that. I can't move in this way. Or if I do move in this way, right, it causes all of these problems. And it sounds kind of trivial because, you know, there are far worse things that people experience. But I think it really affected how I viewed myself in my body. And frankly, made me like it kind of contributed to the depression that I experienced. But I think through that, I started to explore other ways to move, in particular, and other ways to eat. So I think that kind of started as this kind of pathway into, a more holistic approach. I grew up dancing and ballet in particular was my love, but eventually we just had to part ways. it was the reason I had to have both hip operation. And then that's when I started to explore other things. So I had done Pilates, but I had started to explore yoga, and also started to work with an acupuncturist. And so starting to see, right, that my body is not just these parts, but all of it together. I remember when my first experience with acupuncture actually was for a shoulder injury. So the thing that happened in my hips happened in my shoulder as well. So I just really felt like I was falling apart in high school. And for the majority of the treatment, she worked on the opposite side of my body and on the lower half of my body, right? You go in thinking, oh, okay, you know, it's one of my shoulders, you're going to work on my shoulder. No, most of what she did was on a completely different area of the body. And so it started to kind of be like, you know, what exactly is going on here? And so started to ask a lot of questions of her. Again, as I mentioned with diet, my mom and I started to explore, you know, how people talk all the time, right, about foods can be very healing. And so we started to look into, you know, oh, if I eat this, right, it can have these benefits, right? It's not always a guarantee in the sense that I think you see a lot in social media where it's, you know, eat this, this will automatically happen. But when you start to see it through that lens, you kind of are like, oh, there's this whole expansive way that we can heal our body and work with our body in unison, like work with it as a friend, with it as something that we love, as opposed to just pushing it or ignoring what we're experiencing. I would say that was kind of like the start. After college was probably the most significant. My paternal grandmother passed away, and my parents and I were with her when she passed away. It was not the first loss I'd ever experienced, but it was the first time I had been with someone as they passed. And for anyone who has ever been with someone when they passed, that is a very traumatic experience. And I, from my experience, was a very life-altering experience, right? To see someone come to the end of their life, right? Kind of just really has you evaluate your own life and how you're spending your time. I think my grandmother was really blessed to have people around her, with her till the end, praying with her till the end. And for me, that was such a beautiful thing to witness. And again, had me kind of think about when I get to the end of my life, right? What do I want that to look like, right? Who do I want to have with me? What do I want that experience to be? And sounds silly, I guess, in a way, but for me, it really brought up, okay, there's a lot of things I've been saying I wanted to do, but I have just been stalling on. I've been procrastinating on, which is one of my bad habits. One of the things I'd been thinking about was getting a master's in nutrition and getting my yoga teacher certification. And it kind of felt like because I made that decision following my grandmother's passing, it just started to seem like things started moving. About a month or so later, I was in my parents' house, in my parents' bedroom, on their couch. I remember this distinctly. My mom walked into the room and she said, I think I found the program for you. And it was through the Kripalu Center, which she had followed for years, but had never been to. I just put out a plug. Anybody need a nice little weekend away? The Kripalu Center is great. But it was the time in which she found it, I had a very short deadline to apply. They were doing an offsite program in the Northern Virginia area. So the dean at the time was coming down, was coming down once a month to teach us. We found it just in time. And so I did my 9-month program and it was extremely transformative for me. And then my plan was to, you know, start teaching, start my master's program, right? It was like, you have your life, you know, all planned out. And then one of the probably most significant things that I experienced was I started to have these episodes that were affecting my ability to read, to understand, and eventually my ability to speak. And what we found out was I had a brain tumor. So that, of course, really kind of threw things, you know, off track for me. Oddly enough, I think I had like filled something out wrong or missed some deadline. So I actually had gotten a notification that I wouldn't be able to start my master's program till later anyways. And at the time I was really down on myself. Now looking back on it, I think it was because I would not have been able to do it given the surgery. It was almost, you know, the timing just aligned. It was a blessing in a way. And so after getting the diagnosis that I had the tumor, I had a really great surgeon and a really great neurologist and neurosurgeon. And they told me I would have surgery in 3 weeks and I would be awake for it. And, you know, it kind of was very rapid fire. I was put on anti-seizure medication because that's what those episodes were. I was having focal seizures. Mm-hmm. I was put on anti-seizure medication. I was having so many MRIs. I was getting hooked up to things. I had like the little, I don't even know the name from the little nodes all over my head. And it was exhausting. But it was also a practice in like faith and kind of giving up control because I had no control whatsoever, right? When someone tells you you're going to have brain surgery and have your skull, like be awake for it, and that you're just supposed to be on this table with your head open, like you realize, oh, okay, like I'm at the most vulnerable that I will probably ever be, except for maybe, you know, when I'm an infant. So that experience, though, that month or so of that was extremely transformative. I tell people all the time, I had this conversation with God and I told God, okay, I'm not in control. It's all you, right? So whatever you want this experience to be for me, like I accept it. And there was such a shift in that. Because it felt like I didn't have to keep trying so hard, right? I decided I'm just going to be as grateful as possible, right, for all of the little things. So, you know, I had friends who would come hang out with me, right, or get dinner, come down. My best friend came down to visit me, right? It was just all the little moments because you just never, you know, I just didn't know what would things be like after, especially because the where the tumor was in my brain is they be, let me backtrack. Because the tumor, as I came to understand it, and I was told the tumor and the brain matter look the same because they, in case they accidentally, right, took out part of the brain matter, I would lose the ability to speak. So there was, I had full confidence in my surgeon, but there's always a risk. And so again, right, it's like, okay, in 3 weeks, am I going to be back to my normal self? I'm going to be this different version of myself. Am I going to be able to talk? Am I going to have to, you know, work through certain things? We didn't know. And thankfully, my mom had people all over the country praying for me. I still have all the cards, and I still have cards from people saying that they had their churches praying for me for a whole year. They weren't sure. The surgeon said they weren't sure that they were going to be able to remove the whole tumor. That I attribute it to prayers and God, they were able to. And even though, you know, I looked the same to people, inside I felt completely different because again, you know, I was on that table awake and they were telling me, you know, to count and to, I still remember hearing them talking above my head and experiencing that and having the surgeon and the neurologist walk away for a moment, and then the nurses had to go to their different stations, and I'm just by myself. And so I still remember all of that, and I came out of it just kind of in this very place of feeling alone, because and my mom and my dad, like my family, my friends, they all tried to understand, my mom in particular, but it's just like you can't, right? I think the only people I was able to who have felt the same way as me were people who'd been through it, right? And it took me a while to find those people. But it really, that also then forced me and made me want to really continue on the path that I felt God was calling me to, which was like really integrating myself in this wellness space. you know, I had told my parents one morning, maybe a several weeks or months after the surgery, you know, that I think I wanted to switch fields completely into the wellness field. And my dad said, you know, why? You've been at this job for several years. You know, it's a good job, right? It's stable. And I told him, I don't think God put me through this whole experience with my brain tumor for me to stay in something that I'm not completely happy in. And he was like, okay, you know, can't argue with that.
No, you can't. And I mean, just listening to your story unfold, it was like just from a young age, the universe opened it up where you were embracing integrative health practices at a young age, particularly through dance and other alternative forms of movement and eating, just to take care of the somatic complaints or manage those. And then when the brain tumor came, you were able to incorporate a teaching that it takes many a lifetime to master, is that control is an illusion. And just when we believe we have control, the universe says, hold my beer, you don't have control. Here's the plan. And I think to relinquish ourselves to the fact, to a higher power, to say, okay, I want to turn it over, is powerful, because in that sense, you're not alone. And in that sense, you are also connecting to something greater than yourself, which is one big aspect, I think, as we both know, of spirituality. So when you relinquish control, your life became more under control and more purposeful. That was the divine plan that was laid out for you. And this is my observation, because I can't speak to your own subjective experience, but it appears that that was the divine plan of the universe, that this is the path you were going to embrace from a young age. And I think you sensed it. I think you knew it. And here you are. And, you know, you could, you know, just because the universe or spirit opens up a door, it doesn't mean we have to walk through it. Spirit has free will. We have free will. But you chose to trust in God, the universe, a higher power, creator, however we envision that, and say, okay, I'm going to walk the path that you are opening up for me.
Yeah, I think I really liked what you said about the control piece too, because I felt so weighed down, especially in that moment, right? To get the diet, to already be experiencing that and not know what's going on with your body is stressful. To then get the diagnosis, you have a brain tumor, you're going to have surgery, you know, you're going to be awake for your craniotomy. Okay, set up this appointment, this appointment, this appointment. Start taking, like, it was so heavy. And there was something about just saying, I can't do this, right? And as much as I trust my mom, she is the smartest person I have ever met in my life. And, you know, she can fix just about everything. It was like, I knew I couldn't put it on another person. But there was something about letting go and saying, okay, I can't do this. And then, interestingly, I did not feel empty, right? By letting go of it, I felt more full. Yeah. So instead of feeling like the weight down of everything, I felt fuller by letting go and just being like, okay, right? Wherever you want this to go, and not just with the surgery, but wherever you want this whole experience to lead me to. And I don't really know where I got that wisdom from in that moment. Maybe it was just right, the overwhelm and the stress of everything, but it just felt like the only option, not even the best option. It just felt like the only option at the time for how I was going to get through this. And it was really interesting, you know, as you said, that there had been this kind of plan that I didn't realize, I think, till I got to that experience where I looked back and I was like, oh, I've literally been doing this for 15 years or so at this time. And had, you know, I had no idea that, you know, even when my mom would say, oh, come do yoga with me, you know, when I was a little kid, that would then impact, you know, the training that I had, or when I was having all these issues with food, right? Then that would then impact me wanting to get a master's in nutrition, right? Or all these injuries would then impact how I carried myself or the things that I did, even with my diet. After the surgery, I ate a lot of Indian food because to help with any inflammation. And it was so interesting when I went to a couple weeks after the surgery, I went to get the staples out in my skull. And the doctors were like, oh, you look great. Well, you look, they said, you look better than most of our patients. What have you been doing? I said, well, I've been eating a lot of Indian food. I've been, you know, just napping, playing the piano because my mom had heard, you know, music therapy is very good for, you know, for those brain connection. And granted, I had played piano before. They thought it was an effect of the surgery, which it was not. But, you know, I was doing all of these things, kind of taking all this stuff together. I was doing very, very minor, you know, yoga stretches because my energy was so low, and just trying to take all the stuff that I'd learned and put it together. And it was almost like everything before prepared me for that experience alone.
Yeah. And I think hindsight, you know, the saying is, Catherine, is that hindsight is 20/20, but in order to see where we are in the present, we have to look at the past decisions and experiences that got us there, because everything that we did in the past dictates what we're doing in the present. And it's only until we are out of the situation that we're in, or the crisis that we're in, or the transition that we're in, that we can look back and say, yeah, the experience with my mom, who brought me to yoga as a child, paved the way for me to become a certified yoga teacher in yoga nidra.
Yeah.
At this present moment. And it's like past dictates present dictates the future that we want to inspire as well, too. So it all plays a role.
Yes, absolutely.
One of the things we talked about was spiritual self-care. And I saw, I think it was in a blog that you had written or co-authored on Before Directions Wellness website about spiritual self-care. What exactly is spiritual self-care, and why is it important to general physical and mental well-being?
That might have been Mara who wrote it, but we do talk about that a lot. And I'll just speak about it from my experience. So, you know, it's like you can see someone who looks really good on the outside, right? But then you hear stories of people like that, but on the inside, right? Maybe they're really depressed, right? Maybe they're living in this survival mode. But from the outside, they look great, right? So everyone thinks, oh, they're fine, they're healthy, everything's good. And I think it's similar when we talk about spiritual self-care, because the root of everything is our spirit, is our soul, however we decide to whichever phrase or word we use. And kind of everything resonates from that. We all know what it feels like when we wake up on the wrong side of the bed, right? Or when we're going through, you know, potential crisis or a really low period in our lives. Sometimes, you know, how we operate may reflect that, right? Our thoughts, our emotions, how we carry ourselves. You can see the difference between a person who may be walking with confidence and the person who may be carrying themselves with low self-esteem. And so things that help that pour into our spirit, you know, in my opinion, then it radiates out into how we operate mentally, emotionally, and then also physically, right? So whether it's things like taking time for prayer, meditation, you know, if you practice an organized religion, right, going to church, synagogue, temple, whatever that may be, you know, taking that time to connect with God, the higher power, the creator, to help pour into your spirit, right? There are other things as well. I mean, yes, movement, things like yoga can also impact our spirit, right? It can impact that energy, things like Reiki, other holistic practices, spending time out in nature, right? All of these things can then impact our spirit. And I would say we've all had those moments, right? Where we, no matter what's going on the outside, on the inside, we feel at peace, right? We feel like everything's going to be okay. We feel like no matter what, we have this support, this like invisible level of support within us. And then that can just change kind of the trajectory of how the rest of our day, week, month, and beyond can go. And so sometimes I think it's really important for us to remind ourselves that, you know, yes, get your 10,000 steps, go to the gym or take your fitness class, you know, eat your salads, all of those things. But if on the inside, we're also not caring for this invisible part of ourselves too, right? It can only go so far. We have to pour into that part of us that, you know, knows why we're here. Yeah. Right? That's that part of us that knows why we're here. That's that part of us that might be speaking to us through our intuition. And we may be ignoring it because we're more concerned with what somebody said on Instagram or what that friend of a friend said about us, right? Or what society is telling us to do. But our soul knows who we are and what we are and what we're here for. And so when we take that time to create space to commune with our spirit, with our soul, it makes life easier, I think. Even if life is hard, it makes life easier still.
Well, and yeah, I think you put is what I hear you saying, it's not only important to connect to something greater than ourselves or to a community that's going to support our spiritual growth, but we have to take time to go within. And I think yoga allows us to do that. Meditation allows us to do that. Music therapy allows you to do that. There has to be the balance of knowing ourselves, knowing who we are, creating greater self-awareness, and then seeing how our self-awareness or our insights about ourselves align with the outside world. It's that balance of inner and outer, I think.
Yes. 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 And a lot of times I think we spend more time on the outer than the inner. And it's like, can we flip that?
Yeah.
Right. If we're spending more time on the inner, then what happens on the outer side, I think will actually expand out in a greater way than we recognize.
Catherine, what I tell people is that the answers that you have lie within. All you have to do is sit with yourself. And sometimes sitting with ourselves is, we see ourselves as our own worst enemy, because we have to sit with the dark and the light. But to sit with that, to know who we are, creates greater insight and energy for us to be able to connect to other communities and to enhance our greater sense of spirituality. And I think enhance the importance of spiritual self-care as it relates to those who embrace it.
Absolutely. I think often what I've seen sometimes in my, particularly in my yoga classes, because I, in addition to yoga nidra, I also really fell in love with yin yoga. So this is where you might be holding poses for longer. So you're in stillness more. And certain people just couldn't, stay still. It was like there was this uncomfortableness with the stillness, right? Mm-hmm. With that self-awareness, with that self-observation. People are, and I think in our society, it's always about doing, 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 doing. Yeah. But sometimes when you ask people to just sit, right? To just breathe, it's uncomfortable because one, we're not used to it. And then, right? Then you have to sit with yourself, mm-hmm. right? You have to sit with all of you. As you said, right, there's those great parts of us, and maybe there's those parts of us we don't want people to know about, but we know them, and we have to sit with all of it, right? We have to kind of integrate both those aspects of ourselves to become the better version of ourselves, right? To become, and that better version is usually who we truly are.
Yep.
And so it's interesting to see kind of that level of uncomfortableness we still have, right? And that people would rather just kind of rush through stuff, or let me do a quick practice, right? Let me go. And I'm not knocking running, right? Let me go for a run. Let me be in the gym. Mm-hmm. But it's like, but can you sit with yourself for even a minute?
Yeah.
And
a lot of individuals think spirituality is, where there's enlightenment and there's, it's a beautiful thing, and it is beautiful, but there's beauty in the darkness as well too.
Yes.
And some of the best spiritual work that I've done has been when I've looked at the messy parts of myself. And that's where the spiritual growth occurs. But a lot of times, and you're absolutely right, society says, well, let's not look at that. Let's just look at the happiness. And if we don't look at all of who we are, we don't look at the yin and yang of who we are, we lose opportunities to learn from the darkness as well as the light. And we lose opportunities to develop genuineness rather than just a happy outlook on life, which is unrealistic 24 hours a day, 7 days a week.
Right. There's, the feelings wheel that you, for anyone who's listening or watching, look it up. We were not created to only experience one emotion. And I talk about this in my Reiki classes with my student. Like anger in and of itself is not a bad emotion. You have every right to feel angry. There are certain things that should make you angry. And if they don't, right? Someone has probably caused some form of disrespect. by telling people, oh, don't feel angry. No, we're just suppressing it. And then it comes out as rage, right? Telling people to just be happy all the time. Well, happiness is fleeting. You know, you can be happy and then somebody cuts you off on your commute to work. Well, there goes your happiness, right? Like, we have all of these emotions that we were created to experience. And when we experience all of them, I think that actually is what kind of can maybe lead to more enlightenment or to maybe be a more enlightened person. Because, you know, I think in probably the hardest part and points in my life is what then gave me greater gratitude for life, right? For those smaller things, like when you see a beautiful sunset, right? Or when you wake up and you hear all the birds chirping and everything just looks so green and lush. You know, you actually take a moment to stop and look at that, as opposed to just, oh, let me just rush through my day, right? It's things like sometimes grief and sadness, depression, anger, right? Kind of feeling that aloneness as you're, you know, maybe building yourself up after a tough point in life that actually can bring you joy, which I think is what maybe we should aspire to have a little more of than just being happy, quote unquote, happy all the time. Because even in the joy, you can still experience things like sadness, right? Or stress, but it can still carry you through.
Absolutely. We have to, in order to be, to me, totally fulfilled, we have to experience the total spectrum of our emotions. And we contain all of those emotions that other people experience. So we become a mirror where we can help create awareness of each other, of things that we need to look at.
Yeah.
If we're embracing authenticity and we are carrying ourselves authentically. Speaking of Reiki, I want to get into a couple of things. One, to help tell our audience what Reiki is, and also the impact that Reiki has had on the emotional and physical well-being of the patients that you observe at the George Washington University Hospital's Reiki program. So if you can get into that a little bit for us, Catherine, that'd be great.
Yeah, so as a result of my brain surgery, actually, that's when I first experienced Reiki. I think that also, you know, all of this led me, I think, to Reiki. And so Reiki translates to meaning universal life force energy. In yoga, Ayurveda, right, we talk about that life force energy that runs through us is prana. If you've heard of, you know, your qi or heard of qigong, right, that's that same life force energy. So, right, the similar concept, a lot of cultures have this concept and also have, right, their own ways to work with this life force energy. And so with Reiki, we use our hands. It can either be on or off the body to sense this universal life force energy. As practitioners, we kind of serve as this conduit. So it's not like I'm giving my energy to someone else or I'm taking theirs, but it's this universal life force energy is flowing through me. Mm-hmm. And again, it's universal life force energy. So it knows better than I do, but I'm able to sense and feel and maybe pick up on any messages to help, you know, move blockages, stagnation, and just to ultimately give the person what it is they need in that moment. And so after my level one and level two training, I really wanted to give back because I, you know, it was so helpful for me after my surgery. And, funnily enough, where I had my surgery was where I actually ended up volunteering. They did have a program. We were there for about 15 years. So I came in on the tail end of that. We saw over like 8,000 patients and we worked on the patients, their family members and staff actually. And so probably the number one thing we saw was relaxation. It was able to help patients and family members and staff. Helping them to relax. We helped with pain reduction, as well as de-escalating strong emotions like anger, grief, despair, and depression. I would say a lot of what I saw was patients falling asleep. And it was really cool to see because sometimes it was like the patient hadn't slept in days. But we came in and we, you know, did Reiki for like 15 minutes. And the patient was actually able, you know, to sleep for maybe 3, 4, 5 hours, which we know that after you've had something that's traumatic like that to the body, the thing your body needs to heal is sleep, right? And so to, you know, get that feedback, you know, like a week later, where family members were saying, thank you so much for doing this. Like my loved one was finally able to sleep through the night. Just really, no matter what is, you know, even though I'd come from after, you know, working my 9-to-5 job and I'd be kind of tired, when you hear that, you're just like, oh, okay. Like all of this is worth it, right? Like you gave that person what it was that they needed. So we saw, I think, a lot of that, but also with physical pain, I remember there was one patient who had received pain medication. And this was also during the time with, you know, the opioid epidemic, where they were starting to make those shifts in how much pain medication and the, you know, the dosages and what types were allowed. And so the patient was still in pain. And, you know, the nurses were like, you know, we're sorry, we can't give you anymore. But the nurses were great because they saw the effects of Reiki firsthand. And so I remember one patient in particular, the nurse was like, hey, I need you to come in. And so the patient had just received the pain medication. I then did Reiki. And after about 15, 20 minutes, the patient fell asleep. And so it was also really cool to see how, you know, this Western medicine and Eastern approach, this holistic approach worked together, right? I think sometimes we think like, oh, all Western medicine is bad, right? And from my experience, I've had at least 4 surgeries. Mm-hmm. And I know people have a lot more. Like that is not always the case. Like Western medicine has saved me in a lot of ways. And there are these other things that we can do too, right? To help support ourselves. And that's also what I've experienced, right? Western medicine, you know, through surgeries for me were great, right? They helped heal a lot of things. And sometimes we need that additional support, that complement to it, which is what Reiki was in the hospital.
Yeah, and I agree. What Western medicine can't treat, complementary or holistic practices can supplement the deficiencies of Western medicine. And as I've gotten older, I firmly believe that an integrative approach is the way to go. And I don't think we are going to be able to be so discipline specific anymore and just protect our own discipline. Because if we do that, we're going to become isolated and we're going to become out of touch. It's important that we bring our cumulative strengths together for the good of the mental, emotional, physical well-being of any person requesting our services.
Absolutely. And you know, I say this not to reduce it all to, you know, to this example, but it's, you know, it's like when it comes to food, right? Or movement. You know, someone said only do squats the rest of your life, right? That's the only form of movement you can do, right? It's like, well, there's so many more varieties, right? And some things may appeal to you. And maybe at one point you need this, another point you need that, right? Or someone says only eat kale. Don't eat any other greens, only kale. But it's like, but what about collards and Swiss chard and spinach and mustard greens? And, you know, you actually need to rotate them or else you end up causing issues within your body. I think we also need to look at it that way, right? There are certain, and actually I will use this example. Right before we realized I had a brain tumor, when I lost my ability to speak in conversation with my boss at the time, I went and saw my acupuncturist, who was trained as a Western nurse. So she was an ICU nurse, and then also got her doctorate in Oriental medicine. And so she took her little flashlight and she said, okay, you know, follow my eyes with the light. Follow my light with your eyes. And she said, your left eye is sluggish. She said, you need to go see a neurologist. Something is wrong. She said, I can treat the headache that I had developed that day. She said, I can treat the headache you're experiencing, but you need to go see somebody else. And I really appreciated, right, that she knew, right, okay, there's something, like, you need to go utilize Western medicine, you know, in this moment in time to see what's going on. That was something that she just wasn't able to in that moment. And I really respected her for that, and really liked that she said that. And so she was able, you know, she treated my headache, and then I did go, you know, see a doctor, and that kind of started the ball rolling with that. And then as I went through that process, right, she also was kind of there hand in hand and giving her, you know, advice from her lens, right? We were getting it from the surgeon, neurologist, from their lens. So I do just encourage people to, you know, not say that they don't work together, because they do. And in the hospital, we were seeing this all the time. And we were, again, as I said, we were also doing this for the family members, because we know being a caregiver can be a very stressful time. It can also bring up a lot of sadness and grief, right? And mm-hmm. they need that care just as much. And then the staff, right? Doctors and nurses work so hard. They're on their feet all day long. And, you know, sometimes I remember there was one floor where it was an ICU floor. And unfortunately, during that week, they had just lost multiple patients. And that weighed on the doctors and nurses. And so we came in and provided Reiki for those staff members. And I think sometimes we forget too, like, they're people too. You know, they want these patients to get better, and they want to them to be discharged, right? And unfortunately, it doesn't always go that way. And so we were able to provide Reiki for the staff, because they were, you know, they were grieving in their own way too.
Well, and it sounds like there is a really comprehensive macro community approach to doing Reiki at the GW hospital. And you're right, because staff are impacted by the energies that they pick up from chronically ill patients. Families are impacted by their interactions with medical staff and with dealing with a sick family member. So if you're going to provide Reiki to one aspect of that entire system, it needs to be applied to everybody.
Everybody, yes.
For the collective good of that community. So,
yes.
Well, thank you for sharing that. Those are some interesting stories, and I think more validation that Reiki and other complementary practices can work with hand in hand with science to improve physical and mental healthcare outcomes. So, you mentioned about intuition earlier. How can Reiki help cultivate intuition and creativity and foster a sense of peace?
Yeah. So Reiki can actually strengthen our intuition. And, you know, all of us have this. I think a lot of times we think that, you know, and people will say, you know, that they're an intuitive, which, yes, is true. But all of us have that intuition. I think also sometimes people may think that, you know, people may see it more often in mothers, right? Oh, mothers are very intuitive, right? But fathers may not be. And that's not true. But just like anything that we have to continue to work with it and practice it and know how it's speaking to us. And so, you know, when we were talking about that spiritual self-care, you know, Reiki works, again, on us physically, emotionally, mentally, and spiritually. And so when we're taking that time for that stillness, for that silence, for just that time with ourselves, it can help to, as I like to describe it, it can almost help to create, I apologize, there's a train out there. It can almost help to create that space for us to get to know our bodies, right? What is my body saying to me when I place, you know, my hand over my heart, right? What's coming up for me? But then also, you know, maybe what thoughts are coming up? Are there any emotions coming up, right? What is spirit telling me? And so it's almost, right, it's like when you, like letting a little bit of light in, right? But then if you do this every day, you're letting more and more and more light in. And so it's almost like you're helping you're giving your intuition space to speak more. Mm-hmm. And then because you're figuring out, okay, well, how is it speaking to me, right? Some people, they just have this knowing. Or some people, it's through feel, like they just have this feeling. I typically have it through a feeling and a knowing. And it can be really hard to tell people, because for them, right, there's no basis. But I'm like, I just know it, right? Or I just feel it. You know, other people, it can be more auditory. For other people, right, it can be more through like visions or messages. But when we, again, take that time to kind of cut out outside distractions and that outside noise, mm-hmm. it helps us also filter, okay, what is somebody else's thought or beliefs, right? What's my own thought or belief, or what is my intuition telling me in this moment, right? And again, what does that look like for me? Because sometimes people can kind of confuse, like, is that my intuition or is that my fear speaking, right? Which one is it? And Reiki, in my experience, just helps us to decipher it and calm everything down so we can actually hear it.
Yeah, I think the calmer we are, the more our intuition speaks to us and we hear it loudly and clearly. If we're, I think, in a heightened sense of stress or anxiety, or we're too much into our heads, that tends to block the power that our intuition can have over crafting our destiny. So,
yes, absolutely. Absolutely. Especially when you said, you know, like when we're in our heads, right? We have so many thoughts going on, mm-hmm. right? When we're in this either like survival mode, unfortunately, situations in life do happen where people have to function in survival mode. And so it can be a lot harder. But when we, again, right, when we create this space for them, right, whether it's in a yoga class or whether it's in, you know, a Reiki session, whatever it may be, it can like open up this new door for them to experience.
Absolutely. And the other thing that before I forget, that I wanted to emphasize, I know we've been talking a lot about Reiki and yoga, but spirituality and the development of spirituality is such an individual process. There are so many complementary practices out there. I encourage individuals, just look at what's out there. You can do an internet search and find a bunch and just see what speaks to you. And and if that works for you, why not? You know, but works for one person in a sense of creating spiritual awareness may not work for another person. So find out what aligns with your value system, what aligns with your interest, and allow your intuition to take over in terms of what you're drawn to.
Absolutely. Yes. Don't feel like just because I'm saying Reiki, right, you have to go and love it. Mm-hmm. If you do, great. If you don't, that's also great. And sometimes, right, you might find that there are multiple practices or modalities, as we call them, that work for you. And, you know, a lot of my trainings, we talk about having like this toolbox or this toolkit, right? So we have a lot of different tools in there. Some days I need to spend a lot of time in prayer, right? Other days I need yoga. I need movement, right? I need to get out in nature. Mm-hmm. Some days I need Reiki. Some days I need sound healing, right? Some days I just need to cook and have food with a lot of like colorful vegetables and fruits. But we have all of these things. So it's also just figuring out, okay, what do I need today? And other days I need to go talk to my doctor, right? Something doesn't feel right.
Oh, yeah.
So, right. So knowing, right, just as we are this whole person with all these different emotions and we have all these different organs, right, which are all working in unison for us to be our best selves, live our fullest lives, we also can pull in onto all these different tools to help us do that.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Catherine, if you're going to leave our listeners with one thing today, what would that be?
Oh, goodness.
I know they pay me to ask the tough questions, so.
I know. And I think about this and it's always so hard. And I know I'm going to say something and then I'd be like, oh, no, I should have said this instead. I guess if it would be one thing, and this is also, I think, just something from my own experience where, again, right, I would try to control things and it doesn't work when you do that. But I think, how do I say this? Doing whatever it is you can to kind of craft this life that you love, but making sure that taking time for yourself is a priority, is at the top of the list for that. Again, you know, society will tell us all of the things that we have to do. You have to buy this dress, right? You have to go to this concert. You have to do this. You have to do that. And we burn out, right? We just end up doing too much. We listen to so many other people's things. And we really can't craft the life that we desire and love if we become so consumed with or easily pressured into what everyone else wants of us. And while, yes, our loved ones sometimes can see, you know, our gaps where me, you know, hey, you need to, you know, maybe you need to work on this, right? Our loved ones can provide that wisdom for us too. But making sure that you are your own priority, because, right, if people say, right, you're the one who's with you for your whole life, right? You got to be your own best friend. But also making sure that you're not self-sacrificing so much for everybody else that it leaves you, you know, by, you know, maybe the time you have the job you love, you're too burnt out to experience it. So making sure that you are this priority, that you don't try to control everything, but really find those practices, find those things where you feel supported, where you feel grounded, where you feel like you can kind of flow a little more. Mm-hmm. And just show yourself that same love and kindness and care that you would show to a baby, right? That you would show to a loved one. Make sure that you're pouring that into you as well. That was a little all over the place, but hopefully the message got across.
No, I thought it was a multidimensional answer, which fits your philosophy.
Yeah, it does.
Very nicely. So, and I could ask you that same question a week from now, and you might have a different answer anyway. But that was the answer that I think was meant to come out at the time that it did. So,
thank you. It's a good question, also, I think, for us to ask ourselves, or you know. Ask our own loved ones, right? Because there's wisdom that we all carry, and it can, you know, even if one person hears that and it starts to, you know, maybe make a little shift for them, then it was worth, you know, me saying and sharing.
Absolutely. My final question, people want to get in touch with you, want to contract for your services, want to find out more about you. What is the best way for them to do that?
Sure. So they can visit our Four Directions Wellness website, which is fourdirectionswellness.com. That's spelled out four, F-O-U-R, directionswellness.com. So we teaching multiple levels of Reiki throughout the rest of the year and into 2025, as well as other classes too. So check those out. And then also offering individual sessions. We offer complimentary consultation calls, to see if this is a good fit, right? If I'm the right practitioner for you, because that's also part of it, right? It's okay sometimes if people, want to work with a different practitioner, that's fine, right? As long as it's a good fit for you. And we do also have a recording of a self-care practice that we guide you through. So if you also, want to go to the website and check that out, go through your own self-care Reiki experience and explore what that's like for you first. We encourage you to do that, and then, reach out if you have questions. So that's for Four Directions Wellness. Hopefully, people go check it out. If you've never experienced Reiki before, I invite you to explore it. It can be a really powerful practice, a really helpful practice. And I'm so glad that I experienced it. For the first time when I did, it really just completely shifted everything since then.
Thank you for that, Catherine. And thanks again for being just a marvelous guest contributor today on the Teaching Journeys podcast. I enjoyed our conversation immensely.
Me too. Thank you so much for having me. This was wonderful.
You're welcome. And with that, that is a wrap on another episode of the Teaching Journeys podcast. I'm your host, Dave Roberts, wishing you peace.